Chapter 14. To the Call of a Wicked Sword. She stayed close to the back wall, alert and ready, but with no weapon in hand, staring across the low-burning fire to the open door across from her. There was movement out in the hall. Dumuil could sense it, and Cassidea did as well. "Soon, my little doe," the sword promised, "you will regain your leverage. The priestesses will interrogate me," Dumuil reiterated, the strong fear that had kept creeping into her mind as this pivotal day moved nearer to reality. "I will protect you from their inquisitions. The day is ours." A black feline face appeared in the doorway, peeking in from the right, and before Dumuil could react, the huge panther leaped around the corner and into the room, ears flat, fangs bared. "Guinevere," Dumuil said as happily as she could manage. The panther paused, ears coming up. "Oh, Gwen, dear Gwen," the half-elf, half-drow said, clapping her hands together. "You must save me, please." She knew this cat fairly well, and recognized that Guinevere, so intelligent, understood most of what she was saying. The panther padded a step forward, silently sniffing the air. Then Guinevere whirled when Dumuil yelled, "Behind you!" But it was too late, and the stone door slammed shut. The panther hit it hard, clawing and pressing to no avail. And Dumuil slipped out the secret door behind her and closed that too, securing the locking bar, trapping the panther in the room. She moved down a side hallway and around a corner to find Tiago, smiling widely, coming to meet her. "He is mine," the drow declared, and led the way back toward where they knew Drizzt was scouting. In a tower in Menzo Berenzon, Gromph watched the trap spring. The archmage shook his head, not thrilled with the timing here. Too much was at play in Menzo Berenzon, and the last thing he needed now was more complications. He tried to imagine how the return of Tiago might help with the situation, but he couldn't see much to gain, particularly with that wretched half-elf Armgo creature along beside him. At least House Doerden was secure for the time being, and Quenthel would not soon call on him. Gromph waved his arms and barked out a sharp chant. A few moments later, he disappeared, arriving securely into his prepared chamber in Cusor Lauren. He stepped out of the small room to consider the main chapel of the city, across the way and over the primordial pit. Gromph's second spell created a disembodied orb through which he could see, while a third rendered that orb invisible, and off it flew at tremendous speed. A fourth spell turned Gromph into a floating wisp, ghostly and barely tangible, and a fifth made him invisible. Off he went, passing locked doors as if they were open portals, gliding through the forge room where several drow craftsmen and wizards looked up curiously, sensing something. But while the hair on their necks might have stood up in warning, even the greatest of the dark elves in that room could not begin to decipher the wards against detection the archmage had enacted, and he was beyond them before any even realized that something had passed. "The archmage is in Cusor Lauren," Kimuriel informed Jarlaxle only moments later. "Good," the mercenary leader replied. "I have long grown bored of this game. Let us finish it." "Our play must be subtle," Kimuriel warned. "Have we a play to make?" "Jarlaxle always has a play to make." The mercenary leader reset his eye patch to his right eye and shrugged and grinned, clearly accepting that as a compliment. In this one particular case, however, both truly hoped that Kimuriel was wrong. Better for them all if it played out perfectly without any intervention. "I do not expect to find the archmage in a good mood," Kimuriel said. "My brother is never in a good mood. That is his weakness and why he is so predictable." Kimuriel didn't often sigh, but he did so now. Jarlaxle might be taking Gromph lightly, but the psionicist could not afford to do so. If Gromph found them in Cusor Lauren at this critical time and in that critical place, would he consider it a coincidence? Or might he figure out that Kimuriel's scrying gemstones included a bonus to Kimuriel that allowed him to also spy on Gromph? In that instance, the consequences would likely prove rather unpleasant. Drizzt crept along from shadow to shadow, scimitars in hand in these close quarters. He had seen little sign of anyone about or anything amiss, but his warrior sense told him differently. And where was Guinevar? He moved to the doorway of a wider room, the ancient furniture inside broken and cast about. He noted the absence of cobwebs, which were prevalent in many of the other rooms. He wrapped his fingers anxiously around his scimitar hilts. He heard a call then, a low and long roar, more sad than excited, he thought. He clutched the blades tighter. Then came a tapping noise, rhythmic and determined, from across the way in the corridor beyond. Drizzt held his position at the side of the door, his eyes widening when a dark elf, Tiago Beanri, stepped into the room through the opposite door. "Well, Drizzt O'Erden," Tiago said, obviously perfectly aware of Drizzt's position. "Shall we end this at last?" The brash young warrior stepped into the room. Drizzt could have pulled Tolmeril and let fly, but he did not. Instead, he marveled at Tiago's shield and sword, which seemed to him as if made of star stuff, with glittering diamonds encased in the nearly translucent blade, and all about the buckler, which resembled, too, a spider's web. He thought of the dragon fight, where he had seen Tiago up in the darkened sky, when he had first looked upon that sword, and the shield that had unwound to defeat his lightning arrows. He reminded himself that this was a Beanri, and so the armor Tiago wore and the quiet magical items set on his person were likely superior to anything Drizzt had faced in many a decade. The ranger stepped into the room to face his nemesis. "How many years have you pursued me now, Tiago of House Beanri?" Drizzt asked. "Decades," Tiago corrected. "Did you ever believe that I would stop? Did you secretly hope that this day would never come, cowardly rogue? Yours is a foolish endeavor and a worthless quest. I'll not think it worthless when I hand your head to the matron mother." Drizzt sighed and shook his head. They were doomed, his people. Doomed forever to their stupid traditions and dishonorable manners. The drow would war upon the drow until time's end. They would waste their talent and potential, their ability to truly do good for the world, in their endless pursuits of gaining the upper hand, of personal aggrandizement, of petty revenge. "If only," Drizzt mumbled, and not for the first time. "I had no desire to fight you," he said instead. "Then surrender and save yourself the pain," Tiago replied. "I will be as merciful as you deserve." With that, he started walking toward Drizzt, but veered off to the ranger's left, circling, and Drizzt too began to move, keeping himself square with Tiago. "Had no desire," Drizzt emphasized, "for truly your quest seems a silly thing. But then, you see, I only thought of the pain you brought to the people of Icewind Dale, to the people of Port Last, and to the dwarves of Icewind Dale," Tiago finished. "Ah, yes, what fine slaves they make, until they are worked to their miserable deaths, of course." Drizzt narrowed his lavender eyes. He focused on his enemy's weapon and noted the delicate curve of that starlit blade. It wasn't quite as curved as Drizzt's own blades, but it was as much scimitar as straight longsword, leading Drizzt to believe that Tiago fought in circles, much like Drizzt, rather than the straight-ahead and straight-back routines more common among the drow who used longswords. They continued to circle, and Drizzt kept making mental notes of this mostly unknown opponent, who had likely studied many of the tales of Drizzt's fighting style and exploits. Tiago had the edge, Drizzt knew, because Tiago had not ventured into a fight with the unknown. "Leap upon me, O great Drizzt O'Erden," the noble son of House Beanri taunted. "Let your hatred flow to your blades. Let me prove who is the stronger." When Drizzt didn't accept that invitation, Tiago took it upon himself, leaping wildly into the air, flying for Drizzt, falling over Drizzt, his shield spinning and widening, and sweeping clear of his flank as he burrowed in behind it, Vidranath slashing hard. Drizzt was too quick for such a straightforward attack, of course, and he quickly dodged, first to his right, as Tiago surely anticipated, but then fast back to his left, in front of the sweep of the shield. He took Tiago's sword down harmlessly to the side with his right-hand blade icing death, leaving him in a half-turn that aligned Twinkle perfectly with the younger drow's exposed side. But Tiago landed in a spin, with amazing speed and balance, and he came all the way around to bring his shield to bear in time to block the counter. Out came Vidranath with three quick stabs, low, high, and low again. Up went Twinkle to lift the first harmlessly away. Drizzt hopped back from the second, and down came Twinkle to crash against the third strike, driving Tiago's sword down to the side across Tiago's body. Drizzt went out to the left behind the parry, and Tiago spun again and wisely went down low in a crouch so that Drizzt's stab came in high. Tiago slashed across with his shield. Drizzt hopped it and came down with both blades, but Tiago's shield was too large now, and the skilled young warrior brought it up deftly from the slash to cover above. Twinkle and Icing Death struck solidly on the shield and seemed to hold there for just a heartbeat, allowing Tiago to come up fast and hard, stabbing out his sword from under the lifting horizontal shield. Drizzt wasn't quite sure what had just happened or why he hadn't disengaged his blades fast enough to properly respond. That question followed him through his desperate backstepping. Desperate, but not quite fast enough. Tiago's brilliant sword caught up to him and stuck him just a bit until Drizzt could bring his scimitars to bear in driving the biting blade away. He was hurt in the belly and he felt the sting. But that was hardly the worst of his problems, Drizzt realized. He felt something else within that sting, the familiar burn of Drow's sleeping poison. The sword was Vidranath, after all, the Drow word for lullaby. Drizzt grimaced and fought against the poison, one whose sting he had suffered many times before. A lesser drow, a lesser warrior, would have been slowing already from the dose that sword had inflicted. But when Tiago came confidently on, he found a flurry of scimitars blurring in his path and inevitably driving him back. Drizzt took the offensive, fearing that time might work against him as the poison seeped deeper into his body. His scimitars rolled over each other, stabbing and slashing from many different angles. He felt the same frustration as he had that day on the dragon. Tiago was simply too good with that shield to allow for any clean hits, and now Drizzt had learned the hard way to be wary of that shield, suspecting that it had grabbed his blades, allowing Tiago the strike. He had to formulate some new attack routine, had to piece together a strategy in the middle of the frenzy to somehow separate the Bayenri warrior enough from his shield so that he could slip one of his blades past the guard. Drizzt reached into his innate magic, the reverberations of the Faerzris still within him despite his many decades on the surface. Tiago's frame lit up in purplish flames of fairy fire, harmless except that they outlined him more clearly for his opponent. Tiago skidded to a stop, glancing at himself with incredulity, then did likewise to Drizzt, liming him with angry red flames. Dark elf warriors and Menzo barons on hardly bothered with the fairy fire when engaged in melee with each other. For Drizzt, though, the pause gave him a moment of clarity, which was the whole point, and in that moment he searched for answers. He came on furiously once more, red and purple flames licking each other as the two combatants passed and turned. Vidranath came out in a solid thrust, and across came Icing Death to drive it wide to Drizzt's left. But Tiago rolled with the blow, his shield sliding back into alignment to slow any pursuit Drizzt might have intended. And then Tiago swung back the other way, suddenly and powerfully. Up came Twinkle to block, a ringing blow, one heavier than Drizzt had anticipated, telling him that Tiago was likely in possession of some item, a belt or a ring, that granted him magical strength beyond his musculature and training. Drizzt only fought the heavy blow for the blink of an eye, thrusting Twinkle vertically to intercept before collapsing to the right, falling into a roll. Sparks flew as Tiago's sword crashed against Twinkle, and unknown to the combatants, so too flew a piece of Drizzt's left-hand scimitar, compromising the integrity of the blade. The greatest power of Vidranath wasn't its poisoning bite, but the simple craftsmanship of the weapon. It had been created in this very complex, at the forge of Gontalgrim, with primordial fire, and by the greatest drow weaponsmith of the age, using an ancient recipe reserved for this one special blade. Few weapons in all the realms could match the strength of glass-steel Vidranath, and so it was with Twinkle. But Drizzt was too engaged in his plotting, in moving the fight to where he needed it to be, to notice. He rolled to his feet and went right back in, slapping Icing Death hard into Tiago's shield, and retracting too quickly for that equally impressive blocker, Orbcrest by name, to get a firm hold on it. But Drizzt did feel that pull, just for a moment as he retracted, and he understood. And now his plan took clearer shape. Outside the room, Dumwil dared to peek in. Her breath was stolen away. She saw Drizzt and Tiago, each outlined in flames, rushing to and fro, each leaping and flying somersaults, vaulting the debris of old furniture or the others' attempted strikes. Scimitars scraped and rang out with each passage, or a dull drumbeat sounded as Drizzt rolled his blades and Tiago got his shield up to block. At one point, Drizzt broke free and dived aside, rolling up to one knee with his bow in hand instead of his scimitars, each laid neatly on the floor in front of him. Tiago yelped and Dumwil almost cried out, and would have, had not Cassidea shot a warning through her mind before she uttered the gasp, for surely she thought Tiago doomed as the lightning arrow shot toward him. But somehow the young warrior had brought his shield to block the lightning. Dumwil felt her courage waning in the face of this display. The three blades moved faster than she could follow. Either of these magnificent warriors could cut her apart with little effort. Hardly even thinking, Little Doe began to rise, perhaps to run away. "Take heart," Cassidea screamed in her thoughts. "The moment of your salvation is at hand. I cannot defeat them. You do not have to," the sinister sword reminded her. "In their obsession, they will defeat each other." Dumwil's eyes spun as she tried to keep up with the frenetic, beautiful movements. Tiago went down in a slide, his blade coming out wide to cut at Drizzt's thighs. But over that blade went Drizzt in a graceful dive and spin, and he broke out of it wide-armed and wide-legged, landing lightly on his feet. "Go," Cassidea implored Dumwil, for that sword, knowing the tactics of Drizzt so well, knew what was coming. Drizzt went in with Twinkle leading with a low thrust, but that was the feint, and Icing Death went up above and over the sister scimitar, which Drizzt suddenly retracted and swooped down from on high, left to right, smashing solidly against Tiago's shield. The shield grabbed Icing Death, as Drizzt had hoped, and he darted out to the left, tugging and turning and flipping Twinkle in his hand. His left went up high, and as he stepped and turned his back to the twisting Tiago, he drove his hand down and back, a reverse thrust the Bayanri noble could not hope to block with his shield. Drizzt had him. But Twinkle was hit as someone darted in the other way and parried up high, and Drizzt nearly lost the blade. "Ha!" Tiago cried with clear glee, surely thinking victory at hand. But the ranger was quick and Drizzt pulled Icing Death free and completed his spin. Flipping Twinkle, he fell back a step defensively. He wore a curious expression when he came around to see Dumwil, her parry complete, thrust ahead with the blade. But she stabbed at Tiago's exposed flank and not at Drizzt. The Bayanri noble howled and groaned and fell away, clutching his side as Dumwil, her blade bloodied, spun back on Drizzt. "Little Doe," Drizzt said in both relief and surprise, and ending with his surprise multiplied as the daughter of Cynophane, her face a mask of rage, swept her deadly blade across at Drizzt. For this was the plan of Cassidea, the redemption of Dumwil, who would claim the head of Drizzt O'Erden as her trophy when she returned to Menzo Baranzon. Twinkle came up in a vertical block once more, perfectly timed to intercept the slashing sword. But Twinkle had been compromised from the earlier hit, and Cassidea had coaxed every ounce of strength Dumwil could manage into that brutal strike. The fine edge of the sword that could cut stone snapped the blade from Twinkle and continued across, shearing Drizzt's leather armor and mithril shirt with ease, opening a line across the ranger's chest from his left shoulder to the midpoint of his ribs. Blood erupted from the garish wound, pouring freely onto Drizzt's torn shirt. He stood there, mouth agape, staring into the wicked smile of Dumwil, of Little Doe, of the daughter of his dear friend Cynophane. He couldn't retaliate. He couldn't even lift an arm to block as Dumwil lifted the awful Cassidea yet again. Drizzt knew his wound would be mortal. He knew he was dead. He got slammed hard and darkness fell over him. He felt as if he were flying sidelong, or perhaps tumbling over to the ground, and he crashed against the stone and got hit again with brutal force, and knew only darkness and weight, as if the stones of the floor had swallowed him up, or the ceiling had fallen upon him. There was no breath to draw.